destruction to function. Justice for the human family, we demand it. Justice, truth, freedom, equality's a must. Us decolonization of the planet, so bust this. People be the power, now we build the justice. Pointing at system divinations, how we build the justice. Welcome to planet to the podcast, build the justice. Build the justice, build the justice, build. Is to add on or do away with it. Justice.
So welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State University's Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. This organization explores critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world. Your host for today is myself, Assistant Professor Jamie Jackson from the Department of Political Science. I'm also the Internship Program Director for our department and here today to talk with our civic engagement and social justice scholars. We're gonna have a wonderful conversation with one of these scholars who's a student at Sac State, Franny Dewey. And then we'll be able to hear a little bit from our second scholar, Joseph Saiz, who had the opportunity for this project to interview Alex Zuko from the California Student Aid Commission. Both of these students are part of a special grant awarded by the Anchor University grant program, where we had the opportunity to have these students receive stipends for their time interning with our community partner, Social Justice PolitiCorps here in Sacramento. Social Justice PolitiCorps is an organization focused on civic engagement and specifically increasing community engagement transparency around city and regional government. So let's get started. Okay, so getting started, as I said, with me here today is my wonderful student, Franny Dewey. For this project, the students were asked to create a capstone podcast episode. Rather than sharing Franny's full fabulous interview, which I'll have her talk a little bit about in a moment, I decided to have a conversation with Franny where we can reflect on how this project has impacted her, what she's been doing, and how she came to her capstone project for her podcast, which started out, right, Franny, being focused on racial equity in K-12 education and kind of evolved into a community conversation with your daughter. So Franny, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Franny. I am a student at Sac State and a political science major, and I have been working as the civic engagement and social justice scholar through an internship with Social Justice PolitiCorps. So the assignment was to address, have a conversation with a community leader addressing a issue relevant to the social justice work done at our internship placement site. So Social Justice PolitiCorps really does so much work within Sacramento that I had a lot of options to choose from. So I went kind of personally, and I was reflecting on my role as a parent, being an advocate for my kids who are non-white. And so it started, like you said, with this desire to address systemic racism in education and specifically K-12, but it really evolved. I was having trouble finding a community leader to talk to that was working within education, was a parent, was a person of color. So I kind of morphed and evolved, like you said, to having a conversation. I found my pastor is works with, her name is Pastor Doretha William Flournoy, and she does a lot of work addressing mental health, social services in the Black community in Sacramento. And I chose her because when I wanted to have a conversation with my daughter, I wanted to highlight the needs of our community in a way that everyone can understand, that a child can understand. With all of the critical race theory debates going on and much more conversations in society about the impacts of racial violence, I was drawn towards that conversation. But after talking to my pastor more, I realized how critical it was to create a safe space for my daughter. So rather than having a conversation, have her participate in a conversation that I wanted to have, yeah, I needed to participate and create space where she felt safe engaging in a conversation that she wanted to have, that was still related. That kind of pushed me in a different direction. I appreciate your patience as I, you know, went down this discovery. It became a lot more focused on mental health and adverse childhood experiences and providing tools for both adults and children to process these experiences. And then there's, you know, the larger discussion is, you know, of course, how our institutions and schools aren't equipped to address issues related to adverse childhood experiences and identify appropriate tools needed to mitigate challenges that those children will face in the classroom setting. And that, you know, there's some spillover into inherent bias in how institutions and teachers and classrooms perceive their students and perceive the behavior of the students. So, that was kind of the starting point.
Yeah, and I have to say, Franny, because I listened to your capstone a couple of times, and I think in a lot of ways what you do model really well is that this isn't a really simple policy issue, like here's a problem, racial equity in schools, here's a solution. As you say, you know, when you really speak with children and when you come at it from the position of a scholar, an activist, a parent, right, you start to see the layers that are really involved in the process of bringing these important issues of racial equity to children, which is dealing with things like trauma or adverse childhood experiences, which is meeting kids where they're at and making sure, you know, you're creating spaces that are safe for these conversations. But also recognizing the roles of community leaders like your pastor, who aren't necessarily in traditional positions within education systems, but are actually providing services to communities and providing support to families in these really, you know, difficult situations. And so, you know, a child's education isn't just in the classroom, it's also happening in these spaces too. And how do we make both of these spaces a safe place for our kids? And so I thought that your podcast really highlighted not only the layers of challenges, you know, involved in these policy, you know, quote unquote policy issues, but also, you know, the very human dimension of being a kid in this space, you know, and you're, so I guess what I want to ask you is maybe you can share a little bit with us about how the conversation with your daughter went. I'd love for you to tell, you know, our listeners, you know, what were some of the things that you talked about with your daughter in this capstone project, with your daughter and your pastor? And, you know, how did you feel at the end of the conversation, and how did your daughter feel?
Yeah. So we I kind of let my daughter introduce herself to start off. And I wanted to frame the context of our home environment. I'm separated from my husband, and I addressed that separation with my daughter. So that's kind of where I started. So what I didn't directly or overtly say in this piece is that I'm a survivor of domestic violence. And I experienced, abuse in this relationship. And so they're coming from like a WASPy background, talking about family challenges, family crisis, things not working out well is not something you do. and it's certainly not something you do with your children. At least in the way that I had been socialized, you don't talk about, you know, addiction or your failure, homelessness. You talk about your successes typically. So I've always tried to be direct with my kids so they can learn from my experiences. And it was important here to address my own mental health first before opening the conversation up for her to engage in analyzing her own mental health and her own state of being. So there was like a need to explain in delicate terms the trauma that I experienced. And I appreciate you talking about the complexity of it, because I think that's something that has really marked my experience working with Social Justice Politicorps, is recognizing how complex all of these issues are. And it's really important to be very well informed about all aspects in order to make the right choice moving forward.
So Franny, I want to pick up on something that you just said that I thought was really interesting about how your own reflection on these experiences has really impacted, your experience at Social Justice Politicorps, like coming to the table really well informed. So can you speak to that a little bit? Since Social Justice Politicorps is also a civic engagement organization, you know, how does that being really well informed, what role does that play, you know, representing an organization that's trying to inform the public on political issues?
So there's a need to, just like in the conversation I had with Quincy, Social Justice Politicorps has a need to break down the density of public meetings to communicate and share it with the masses. And so for everyone to be on the same page and be informed and be able to engage in an effective way, there needs to be understanding, right? And so there's a task to break down the complexity of issues in a way that everybody can understand so they can make an informed decision about how to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I love that you're learning this. I mean, yes, you're learning this as an intern at the organization, which is awesome. That's the whole point of internships. But you're also learning this in the process of trying to communicate difficult and complex topics as a parent, as a mother. And I want to recall a quote from your interview with your daughter, where at one point you and your pastor are sort of asking her about how she deals with difficult subjects. And she's listing off these things she likes to do. And she says, oh, and you've got to laugh and you've got to dance. You've got to dance it out. And she's talking about like these really like practical mental health practices. And it's like, man, the things we can learn from children, right? And the way they see the world and the way that they cope with difficult subjects and difficult times. And I just thought that was really, really beautiful. And yeah, does your daughter dance and sing a lot? Is that part of her practice?
Dance. And she's, yeah, she's picked up on that for sure.
That's amazing. So the next question I have for you, Franny, is, you know, how has this internship experience and also the creation of this kind of culminating podcast episode, and we have another culminating event coming up on May 4th, which I'll talk about at the end. How has this impacted sort of your perspectives on not only what is social justice, but how do we, you know, how do we strive for social justice in our kind of political practices?
Yeah, there's not an easy fix, I think, is, and it doesn't take just one solution. So really, you know, building coalitions and addressing issues from every angle is necessary. I wanted to have a conversation about racism and identity and inherent bias with my child, but I couldn't do that without recognizing that there were larger needs connected to her identity, larger emotional needs. Let me pause, sorry.
So larger emotional needs connected to her identity. And I think you also come to the podcast or the Capstone project that you created, as well as you've come to your work at Social Justice Politicorps with a lot of sensitivity, right? And recognizing that your identity is different in many ways than your daughter's identity in the spaces she occupies. And so my last question for us is, as you know, as a parent, but also as a scholar of social justice and civic engagement, and you kind of hinted at this in the beginning of our conversation, but what would you like to see change in, you know, K through 12 education, you know, recognizing, you know, that you in some ways come from a more privileged space than your daughter, not that you haven't had an enormous amount of hardship. And, you know, your story is really, I'm always so proud of you, like, and what you've been doing and what you've accomplished. But, you know, given this space that you occupy and this, you know, learning that you've experienced throughout this process and then your position as a parent, you know, what would you like to see kind of change in K through 12 education to improve racial equity and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very tricky question to answer because it's a complex issue. And there's so many elements that go into racialized violence in K through 12. I think for me, recognizing how to identify adverse childhood experiences and have some kind of like a more of a built up capacity to address mental health of youth. This didn't come up in my interview specifically, and you can take this out if it's too off subject. But my son, he's in daycare now, so he's not in public school yet. But his adverse childhood experience kind of overlapped with inherent bias of his teachers to create a dynamic where he was being scapegoated in his classroom, where he was being responded to by the teachers as if he was a problem. And so there, I pause because, you know, there's so many, my mind goes to all the places where this is connected. Identity, autonomy, self-actualization, in order to pursue political change, we have to believe that it's possible. Mm-hmm. And be grounded in reality, and talk about the messy things, the uncomfortable things, the things that we don't want to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I think in K through 12, like having a curriculum and a capacity of teachers to have conversations that are more delicate, conversations about mental health, about adverse childhood experiences, about inherent bias and structural violence. Those are conversations that are necessary for teachers to be having with their students.
Yeah, well, thank you, Franny. This has been really amazing. It's a very thoughtful, I think, thing kind of note to sort of transition and pivot from. If you want to hear Franny's full interview with her daughter and her pastor about their experience, it will be linked when we release this podcast through our various social media channels. It's a really incredible interview. I could spend literally all afternoon talking to Franny about this experience, but we're now going to transition to listening to our other civic engagement and social justice scholar who, like Franny, is really passionate about this question of racial equity in education. And he chose to focus on higher education, an environment where both he and Joseph and Franny have seen the good and the things that need to change in the higher education system. And so let's listen to his interview with Alex Zucco from the California Center, or California Student Aid Commission, and then I'll sign us off with an announcement about a civic engagement workshop that Franny and Joseph will be hosting for our community on May 4th. So let's hear from Joseph.
Hello, my name is Joseph Sayas, and I am a civic engagement and social justice scholar. I'm a fourth year journalism poli-sci student, and it is my last semester. And I had the great pleasure of having the opportunity to interview Alex Zucco. Alex, if you could just introduce yourself and tell me what organizations you work with.
Sure. My name is Alex Zucco. Currently, I am the Government Relations and Advocacy Manager for the California Student Aid Commission. I've only been here since July. Prior to my work here, I had worked for an assembly member in the district as his education deputy. Also was an elected school board member in Southern California for two terms and had worked for the California School Board Association and the Attorney General, Mr. Becerra. So kind of a bit of an awkward path, but, you know, not direct. And now I'm with the commission.
That is actually so great. And you did mention the commission. So my first question for you is, would you tell me a little bit about what CSAC is doing to improve diversity in higher education?
The point of contact we have with students is in affordability. So when we are looking at increasing diversity in higher education, it is making sure that we have grants and giving students the tools to get to college, all students, all Californians, regardless of their immigration status. So we want to make sure that everybody knows not only that the money is there, but that there is also free money, because we give away grants, which means you do not have to pay it back, which is the best kind of money to get to go to college. So we have the Cash for College events, which those are held at high schools around the state. And they are not only for the student, but for the parents, because a lot of the forms the students need to fill out are kind of above their pay grade. It's like, here's tax information, and this is our salary and our incomes and things like that. So they're kind of some, and we want to make sure that we have those in multiple languages so that parents and students and the whole family can kind of understand what they're getting into and the forms, because they're not user friendly. And then also making our materials available in a lot of languages as well. We also even have, when we do social media, we do it in a number of languages, so that we want to make sure that any student that is coming into the higher education or wants post-secondary opportunities will have that at the community college level, as well as the four-year level, and as well as there are also grants that go into kind of the workforce, like programs like to become an apprentice, to become a plumber's apprentice and things like that. Those grants exist as well. So that is our point of contact for making sure diversity is kind of being addressed, is in who we approach to let them know the money is available.
Those point of contact sound amazing. And as a student, I'm glad that there's grants that shares diversity and equity with not just students that maybe are from the country, but also maybe undocumented students and just students that need help. And speaking of which, my next question is going to be, what is a huge issue of higher education that deals with equity?
You know, for equity, it is, depending on the population, there's different issues. One is Pell Grant, which is the federal grant, which is, we are Cal, they're Pell. Has not kept up with the cost of going to college. And going to college is not just about tuition. So the biggest obstacle we think students have encountered is access to just basic human needs. Do they have food? Do they have a place to live? I mean, it's more, you can give a student tuition, but they do still have other needs that need to be addressed. So I wanna say 20, 30 years ago, the Pell Grant used to cover 80% of the cost of going to college. And now it is 30%. And it is not even close to keeping up to what that college costs. And so we in California, and I would say we do the best of all 50 states in making college more accessible and affordable, and we still aren't even close. I mean, we could still do so much better. So we have also now, like some of the things we do to make sure we're relieving some of those points of pain, those pain contact points, is to when a student files their FAFSA or CADA, we let them know, you know, it looks like you're eligible for Cal Grant and for these services. You may also be eligible for CalFresh. You may also be eligible for other kinds of assistance that you may not have been aware of that don't have anything to do with the education costs, but go to your basic needs costs. So that is one way that I think we can help. And last year, the Student Aid Commission assembled a work group to discuss specifically CalFresh, because of the maybe 700,000 or 800,000 students that are eligible for CalFresh, only 125,000 receive those benefits. And sometimes it takes months for them to receive those benefits. Something magical doesn't happen between 12th grade when they're receiving free and reduced lunch and then they go off to college. They didn't suddenly come into a bunch more money as soon as they became a 13th grader. So making sure we are keeping up with that point as well, so they know that they could have these services as well.
Thank you so much. And I think that 30% now is saddening, especially with dealing with students that need the money. As a student myself that has CalFresh and that uses like the Pell Grant, it is very taxing for me myself to see, okay, this is what I'm going to spend my money on. This is what I need. This is what I don't need. And speaking of the equity gap, I do want to go more in detail with a racial equity gap and how can we discuss that in higher education?
Well, the one like point that we don't ever get to is the admissions process. And that's more of a segment question. So on the students that are being admitted, we wouldn't really have much data. We don't really have that much data on how their admissions kind of take that into account and how that kind of, how that plays out to work to create a more diverse campus. I do know just because I have two daughters that have gone through college, I know that they have programs on campuses, but the only role the commission plays is in handing out money and making sure that students are aware of the money that's available. We don't get to be really part of, we don't get to kind of see the other end where we're looking at admissions to see how they're being selected to be able to attend higher education. So I don't really have many data points on that.
Okay, and that's completely understandable.
We would love to be more involved. We would love to get those data points. The segments are not super transparent sometimes.
Totally understandable. As a Latino myself, being a first generation student, it's very hard to want to continue in higher education because it just feels like the threshold is that much harder. So moving along, what can we do to better have an equitable higher education, especially for first generation college students that might be in the BIPOC community?
Well, and one of the previous jobs I held was with the California State PTA, and we had a parent engagement program, and the success of it relied on the fact that we knew as an organization, a statewide parent organization, that 60% of all students in California K through 12 schools had parents that did not attend school in the United States. So our foundation of just expecting like you'll understand the process of getting into it is not true anymore. I mean, that is not kind of the norm. And so kind of even just starting from that point where you have to kind of look at yourself as a customer facing business, like we have these students, and this is going to be, while we may be admitting students, hundreds of thousands of students every year, this is the first time this family has been here. And you need to kind of approach them in that way. I think that that is that's a missing piece that sometimes schools expect that since I hand out 100 checks for financial aid a day, I process this many admissions. For you and your family, this was the first time you did it. So you're not an expert yet. And you need to kind of approach families and students in that respect. Like, I am here to help you through this journey. Like, this is going to be something that we do together. And I am going to make sure you understand every step of the way as we're going. So it's not making you uncomfortable or your parents, and you know all the opportunities available. But I would love to see the segments be more inclusive of that kind of that international experience that especially our state has with their family units, because it's a lot having it kind of going from K through 12, which is a very, very kind of insulated kind of piece to your neighborhood and stuff like this. And then for some parents, sending their child to another city that they will not be able to see them every day, and just trusting that they'll be okay in this environment. I think that hosting events that I think sometimes universities and colleges like to try to get the most bang for their buck. They'll have a large event and just say, y'all come, everybody's welcome. When they really should be doing smaller ones, saying, we wanna do an event that is targeted at the API community and invite and make sure it is welcoming to that. And then we want to do one that is for Latino and Latina students, and then for LGBT students and people of color, and you make them more targeted so they can appreciate that the communities will exist when they get to the college. Because while we will become part of the entire university family, you won't right away, and you'll want to have those kind of smaller communities that you create within your kind of networks on campus to make these big giant campuses feel small. Mm-hmm. And so I think the schools that do those targeted events and do a lot of little ones, I think they're far more successful, and just kind of appreciating that it is going to be acknowledging that you have all these different experiences will make people feel more heard and more comfortable on the campus.
Yeah, and I totally understand your point. Coming into a city such as Sacramento, at first I thought I didn't see like people that looked like me, like Latino, brown skin. But then there's a great community that I was able to be a part of, that the Cerna Center, the DRC centers on my campus, they host different events for inclusivity. Actually, being a part of graduating soon, they have a graduation ceremony for Latinx students.
Correct. And the schools that do that is such a smart idea. I mean, you have like, not saying that you have to do just that one or just one or the other, but you give people opportunities so they have like networks and things that kind of highlights the different special qualities that everybody kind of brings to the table. That what makes it a richer conversation.
Yes, and I totally agree with that. The whole point why I wanted this interview is to talk more about higher education and what we can do to help maybe the BIPOC community, to help destigmatize or even demystify the processes of higher education. So on that note, one final reflection, what exactly would you want to be seen, you said during admissions, that will be more inclusive for the BIPOC community? Maybe myself as a Latino, seeing a Latino kid being able to say, I can go to higher education. What is that lasting impression that you would want to see maybe during the admissions process?
Well, I mean, I think it starts with representation. If you walk onto a campus and nobody looks like you that works there, or are people you come into contact, even when you have, you're doing the campus visits. Like I remember, you know, taking our girls to visit the different places. You want the people talking about the campus, and those are usually student-led, and they're walking, talking about things. Making sure you have student representation that looks like all the students that you have there, I think is a great first start. So they, when they look at this student leading the tour, they see themselves there. Like I could give, in 3 years, I could be the one giving this tour. And then when you walk into these different student spaces where they have to do the registration, buy books, get their financial aid package, you know, all these kind of registrar questions, when you're walking into those places as well, it's reflective of the community that we have. Because I think academia is very stodgy. It's a very kind of elite place sometimes. And I don't know that the staff sometimes reflect the diversity they're looking for. So that would be a great place that I think they should start, is that, and this is Alex is a parent of people and students. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think that it would be much better when students walk into a campus, they see people that are working there that also kind of look like them. Also the students they come into contact with, because typically when you go to the student store, those are all students, you know, for the most part, and you just have that kind of feeling when you walk in, that you belong, because you see the other students there that look like you, and they feel like you have some of the same kind of foundational experiences, and making sure they highlight. I know that several times it's not like a rush week, but it is like a club week, and really encouraging and valuing those different clubs to kind of flourish and have kind of uplift what they're trying to do, so students know where to find the people and the interests and the core things they're looking to kind of identify with. Those would be two or three ways I would start.
And I love your 2 to 3 ways. Sacramento State actually does each semester, the first 2 weeks they have a club rush. And nice. Being a student, I was actually a part of the club rush and seeing the different kinds of clubs, different organizations. We have a Latino organization, we have Black Frats, we have an all-male inclusive fraternity. So I think it's great when you see people of your identity and color, especially when it becomes teaching opportunities, professors, faculty, staff, seeing someone in a position of power that looks like you, I think is a way where you can see yourself in the future as that position of power, or maybe that professor that you would want to engage with students. Exactly. And thank you. Those are the last of my questions.
Okay.
And Alex, I just want to thank you so much for taking your time to
be
interviewed. Well, thank you again. And I appreciate your honest responses. And I do hope that someday I can see a partnership with CSAC and how we can have racial equity within higher education, or even see students apply more to prestigious colleges that they think they might not get into because of their skin color, because of their identity.
Absolutely.
So I think when partnerships happen, that they can break down those molds and demystify the issues that students may face.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, that was a really wonderful interview. Thank you, Joseph, for your work on this capstone project and for asking difficult questions about equity in higher education. And thank you to Alex Zucco from the California Student Aid Commission for taking the time to participate in this project. For those of you listening, we appreciate you tuning in to hear about the work of these civic engagement and social justice scholars, Franny and Joseph. Student-led work really produces some amazing, thoughtful changes and suggestions for us all to think about in terms of our own efforts at improving equity in education at all levels. So this was a really wonderful project. We're very grateful to you, Franny and Joseph. I also want to again thank the Anchor University Grant Initiative for funding this project, and of course the amazing partners at Social Justice Politicorps for hosting our interns. On May 4th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the Downtown Center, Sacramento State's downtown building, we will be having a civic engagement workshop hosted by Franny and Joseph in conjunction with the Social Justice Politicorps, and featuring a keynote speech by our very own student Chrissy Martinez from the Political Science Department, who's graduating this year and has also been amazingly active in civic engagement. And so we're really looking forward to that. We hope you all will join us. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you to the Center for Race, Immigration, and Social Justice for hosting this podcast. We appreciate your time and the work that you're doing on our campus. So thanks for listening.
All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for building justice. Building justice.